The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, June 13th, 2017. Today, Attorney General Jeff Sessions faced the Senate Intelligence Committee following former FBI Director James Comey's testimony there last week. It was a tense day. He answered questions about his meetings with Russian official Sergei Kislyak. He answered questions about why he recused from the Russia investigation. He answered questions about Comey's suggestion that he had shrugged meekly when confronted with having abandoned his FBI director to the clutches of President Trump. We've cut out all the extraneous nonsense, all the repeated questions, all the stuff you don't need, and we're bringing you just the questions and just the answers the first time they're asked and answered. It's the Lawfare Podcast, middle of the week edition, Attorney General Sessions versus the Intelligence Committee with no bull.
Thank you much. Thank you very much, Chairman Burr and Ranking Member Warner, for allowing me to publicly appear before your committee today. I appreciate the committee's critically important efforts to investigate Russian interference with our democratic processes. Such interference can never be tolerated, and I encourage every effort to get to the bottom of any such allegations. As you know, the Deputy Attorney General has appointed a special counsel to investigate the matters related to the Russian interference in the 2016 election. I'm here today to address several issues that have been specifically raised before this committee. And I appreciate the opportunity to respond to questions as fully as the Lord enables me to do so. But as I advise you, Mr. Chairman, and consistent with longstanding Department of Justice practice, I cannot and will not violate my duty to protect the confidential communications I have with the President. Now let me address some issues directly. I did not have any private meetings, nor do I recall any conversations with any Russian officials at the Mayflower Hotel. I did not attend any meetings at that event separate. Prior to the speech I attended by the President today, I attended a reception with my staff that included at least 24 people and President Trump, though I do recall several conversations that I had during that pre-speech reception. I do not have any recollection of meeting or talking to the Russian ambassador or any other Russian officials. If any brief interaction occurred in passing with the Russian ambassador during that reception, I do not remember it. After the speech, I was interviewed by the news media. There was an area for that in a different room, and then I left the hotel. But whether I ever attended a reception where the Russian ambassador was also present is entirely beside the point of this investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 campaign. Let me state this clearly, colleagues. I have never met with or had any conversation with any Russians or any foreign officials concerning any type of interference with any campaign or election in the United States. Further, I have no knowledge of any such conversations by anyone connected to the Trump campaign. I was your colleague in this body for 20 years, at least some of you, and I and the suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, which I have served with honor for 35 years, or to undermine the integrity of our democratic process, is an appalling and detestable lie. Relatedly, there is the assertion that I did not answer Senator Franken's question honestly at my confirmation hearing. Colleagues, that is false. I can't say colleagues now. I'm no longer a part of this body, but former colleagues, that is false. This is what happened. Senator Franken asked me a rambling question after some 6 hours of testimony that included dramatic new allegations that the United States intelligence community, the U.S. intelligence community, had advised President-elect Trump, quote, that there was a continuing exchange of information during the campaign between Trump's surrogates and intermediaries for the Russian government, close quote. I was taken aback by that explosive allegation, which he said was being reported as breaking news that very day, and which I had not heard. I wanted to refute that immediately. Any suggestion that I was part of such an activity, I replied, quote, I replied to Senator Franken this way, quote, Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it. Close quote. That was the context in which I was asked the question, and in that context, my answer was a fair and correct response to the charge as I understood it. I was responding to this allegation that we had met, surrogates had been meeting with the Russians on a regular basis. It simply did not occur to me to go further than the context of the question and to list any conversations that I may have had with Russians in routine situations, as I had many routine meetings with other foreign officials. So please hear me now. And it was only in March, after my confirmation hearing, that a reporter asked my spokesperson whether I had ever met with any Russian officials. This was the first time that question had squarely been posed to me. On the same day, we provided that reporter with the information related to the meeting that I and my staff had held in my Senate office with Ambassador Kislyak, as well as the brief encounter in July after a speech that I had given during the convention in Cleveland, Ohio. I also provided the reporter with a list of 25 foreign ambassador meetings that I'd had during 2016. In addition, I provided supplemental testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee to explain this event. So I readily acknowledge these two meetings, and certainly not one thing happened that was improper in any one of those meetings. Let me also explain clearly the circumstances of my recusal from the investigation into the Russian interference with the 2016 election. Please, colleagues, hear me on this. I was sworn in as Attorney General on Thursday, February 9th. The very next day, as I had promised to the Judiciary Committee I would do, at least at an early date, I met with career department officials, including a senior ethics official, to discuss some things publicly reported in the press that might have some bearing on whether or not I should recuse myself in this case. From that point, February 10th, until I announced my formal recusal on March 2nd, I was never briefed on any investigative details, did not access any information about the investigation. I received only the limited information that the department's career officials determined was necessary for me to form and make a recusal decision. As such, I have no knowledge about this investigation as it is ongoing today, beyond what has been publicly reported. I don't even read that carefully. and I have taken no action whatsoever with regard to any such investigation. On the date of my formal recusal, my chief of staff sent an email to the heads of relevant departments, including by name to Director Comey of the FBI, to instruct them to inform their staffs of this recusal and to advise them not to brief me or involve me in any way in any such matters. And in fact, they have not. Importantly, I recuse myself not because of any asserted wrongdoing or any belief that I may have been involved in any wrongdoing in the campaign, but because a Department of Justice regulation, 28 CFR 45.2, I felt required it. That regulation states, in effect, that department employees should not participate in investigations of a campaign if they served as a campaign advisor. So the scope of my recusal, however, does not and cannot interfere with my ability to oversee the Department of Justice, including the FBI, which has an $8 billion budget and 35,000 employees. I presented to the president my concerns and those of Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein about the ongoing leadership issues at the FBI, as stated in my letter recommending the removal of Mr. Comey, along with the Deputy Attorney General's memorandum on that issue, which have been released publicly by the White House. Those represent a clear statement of my views. I adopted Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's points that he made in his memorandum and made my recommendation. It is absurd, frankly, to suggest that a recusal from a single specific investigation would render the Attorney General unable to manage the leadership of the various Department of Justice law enforcement components that conduct thousands of investigations. Finally, during his testimony, Mr. Comey discussed a conversation that he and I had about the meeting Mr. Comey had with the president. I'm happy to share with the committee my recollection of that conversation that I had with Mr. Comey. Following a routine morning threat briefing, Mr. Comey spoke to me and my chief of staff. While he did not provide me with any of the substance of his conversation with the president, apparently the day before, Mr. Comey expressed concern about proper communications protocol with the White House and with the president. I responded. He didn't recall this, but I responded to his comment by agreeing that the FBI and the Department of Justice needed to be careful to follow department policies regarding appropriate contacts with the White House. Mr. Comey had served in the department for better than two decades, and I was confident that he understood and would abide by the well-established rules limiting communications with the White House, especially about ongoing investigations. That's what's so important to control. My comments encouraged him to do just that, and indeed, as I understand it, he in fact did that. Our Department of Justice rules on proper communications between the department and the White House have been in place for years. Mr. Comey well knew them. I thought and assumed correctly that he complied with them. So I'll finish with this. I recused myself from any investigation into the campaign for president, but I did not recuse myself from defending my honor against scurrilous and false allegations. At all times throughout the course of the campaign, the confirmation process, and since becoming Attorney General, I have dedicated myself to the highest standards. I've earned a reputation for that at home and in this body, I believe, over decades of performance. The people of this country expect an honest and transparent government, and that's what we're giving them. This president wants to focus on the people of this country to ensure they are treated fairly and kept safe. The Trump agenda is to improve the lives of the American people. I know some have different ways of achieving this and different agendas, but that is his agenda, and it's one I share. Importantly, as Attorney General, I have a responsibility to enforce the laws of this nation, to protect this country from its enemies, and to ensure the fair administration of justice. And I intend to work every day with our fine team and the superb professionals in the Department of Justice to advance the important work we have to do. These false attacks, the innuendos, the leaks, you can be sure will not intimidate me. In fact, these events have only strengthened my resolve to fulfill my duty to reduce crime, to support our federal, state, and local law enforcement officers who work on our streets every day. Every one of our citizens, no matter who they are or where they live, has the right to be safe in their homes and communities. And I will not be deterred. I will not allow this great department to be deterred from its vital mission.
You talked about the Mayflower Hotel, where the president gave his first foreign policy speech, and it's been covered in the press that the president was there, you were there, others were there. From your testimony, you said you don't remember whether Ambassador Kislyak was there, the Russian ambassador. Is that correct?
I did not remember that. But I understand he was there. So I don't doubt that he was. I believe that representations are correct. In fact, I recently saw a video of him coming into the room.
And there was, in that event, was there ever a private room setting that that you were involved in?
No.
With any?
Other than the reception area that was shut off from, I guess, the main crowd, a couple of dozen, 2 to 3 dozen people.
You mentioned that there were some staff that were with you at that event, your Senate staff.
Senate legislative director was with me in the reception area and throughout the rest of the events.
Would you say that you were there as a United States senator or as a surrogate of the campaign for this event?
I came there as a interested person, very anxious to see how President Trump would do in his first major foreign policy address. I believe he'd only given one major speech before. That would maybe at the Jewish AIPAC event. And so it was an interesting time for me to observe his delivery and the message he would make. That was my main purpose of being there.
Now, you reported two other meetings with Ambassador Kislyak, one in July on the sidelines of the Republican convention, I believe, and one in September in your Senate office. Have you had any other interactions with government officials over the year in a campaign capacity? I'm not asking you from a standpoint of your Senate life, but in the campaign capacity.
No.
General Sessions, on March 2nd, 2017, you formally recused yourself from any involvement in the Russian investigation being conducted by the FBI and the Department of Justice. What are the specific reasons that you chose to recuse yourself?
Well, the specific reason, Mr. Chairman, is a CFR, Code of Federal Regulations put out by the Department of Justice, part of the Department of Justice rules, and it says this. I'll read from it, 28 CFR 45.2. Unless authorized, no employee shall participate in a criminal investigation or prosecution if he has a personal or political relationship with any person involved in the conduct of an investigation. It goes on to say for political a political campaign, and it says if you have a close identification with an elected official or candidate arising from service as a principal advisor, you should not participate in an investigation of that campaign. Many have suggested that my recusal is because I felt I was a subject of the investigation myself. that I may have done something wrong, but this is the reason I recused myself. I felt I was required to under the rules of the Department of Justice, and as a leader of the Department of Justice, I should comply with the rules, obviously.
So did your legal counsel basically know from day one you would have to recuse yourself of this investigation because of the current statute?
Well, I do have a timeline of what occurred. I was sworn in on the 9th, I believe, of February. On the 10th, had my first meeting to generally discuss this issue where the CFR was not discussed. We had several other meetings, and it became clear to me over time that I qualified as a significant principal advisor type person to the campaign, and it was the appropriate and right thing for me to recuse myself.
This could explain Director Comey's comments that he knew that there was a likelihood you would recuse yourself because he was probably familiar with the same statute.
Well, I think probably so. I'm sure that the attorneys in the Department of Justice probably communicated with him. Because, Mr. Chairman, let me say this to you clearly. In effect, as a matter of fact, I recused myself that day. I never received any information about the campaign. I thought there was a problem with me being able to serve as Attorney General over this issue, and I felt I would possibly have to recuse myself, and I took the position correctly, I believe, not to involve myself in the campaign in any way, and I did not.
You made a reference to your chief of staff sending out an email immediately notifying internally of your decision to recuse. Would you ask your chief of staff to make that email available?
We would be pleased to do so, and I think I have it with me now.
Thank you, General Sessions. Have you had any interactions with the special counsel, Robert Mueller, since his appointment?
I have not. With regard to the email we sent out, Mr. Comey, Director Comey, indicated that he did not know that when I recused myself or did not receive notice, one of those emails went to him by name. So a lot happens in our offices. I'm not accusing him of any wrongdoing, but in fact, it was sent to him and to his name.
Okay. General Sessions, as you said, Mr. Comey testified at length before the committee about his interactions with the president, in some cases highlighting your presence at those meetings. And you addressed the meeting where all were asked to leave except for Director Comey, and he had a private meeting with the president. And you said that he did inform you of how uncomfortable that was, and your recommendation was that the FBI and DOJ needed to follow the rules limiting further correspondence. Did Director Comey ever express additional discomfort with conversations that the president might have had with him, because he had two additional meetings and I think a total of 6 phone calls?
That is correct. There's nothing wrong with the president having a communication with the FBI director. What is problematic for any Department of Justice employee is to talk to any cabinet persons or White House officials, high officials, about ongoing investigations that are not properly cleared through the top levels of the Department of Justice. And so it was a regulation I think is healthy. I thought we needed and strongly believe we needed to restore discipline within our department to adhere to just those kind of rules, but plus leaking rules and some of the other things that I think are a bit lax and need to be restored.
You couldn't have had a conversation with the president about the investigation because you were never briefed on the investigation.
That is correct.
General Sessions, just one last question. You were the chair of this foreign policy team for the Trump campaign. To the best of your knowledge, did that team ever meet?
We met a couple of times, maybe. Some of the people did. But we never functioned, frankly, Mr. Chairman, as a coherent team. We had various meetings.
Were there any members of that team you never met?
Yes.
Okay. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, General Sessions. As I mentioned in my opening statement, we appreciate your appearance here, but we do see this as the first step, and I would just like to get your commitment that you will agree to make yourself available as the committee needs in the weeks and months ahead.
Senator Warner, I will commit to appear before this committee and other committees as appropriate. I don't think it's good policy to continually bring cabinet members or the attorney general before multiple committees going over the same things.
Can we also get your commitment, since there will be questions about some of these meetings that took place or not, that we could get access to documents or memoranda or your day book or something so we can...
Mr. Chairman, we will be glad to provide appropriate responses to your questions and review them carefully and try to be responsive.
Yesterday, a friend of the president was reported to suggesting that President Trump was considering removing Director Mueller as special counsel. Do you have confidence in Director Mueller's ability to conduct his investigation fairly and impartially?
I have confidence in Mr. Mueller.
So you have confidence he can do his
job? But I'm not going to discuss any hypotheticals or what might be a factual situation in the future that I'm not aware of today, because I know nothing about the investigation.
I've got a series of questions, sir. Do you believe the president has confidence in Director Mueller?
I have no idea. I've not talked to him about it.
Right. Will you commit to this committee not to take any personal actions that might result in Director Mueller's firing or dismissal?
Well, I think I probably could say that with confidence because I'm recused from the investigation.
To your knowledge, have any Department of Justice officials been involved with conversations about any possibility of presidential pardons about any of the individuals involved with the Russia investigation?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not able to comment on conversations with high officials within the White House. That would be a violation of the communications rule that I have to
adhere. Is that, just so I can understand, is the basis of that unwillingness to answer based on executive privilege or what?
It's a longstanding policy of the Department of Justice not to comment on conversations that the Attorney General has had with the President of the United States for confidential reasons that really are founded in the co-equal branch powers in the Constitution of the United States.
But just so I'm understanding, does that mean, are you claiming executive privilege here today, sir?
I'm not claiming executive privilege because that's the President's power, and I have no power to claim
executive
privilege.
What about conversations with other Department of Justice or other White House officials about potential pardons? Not the President, sir.
Mr. Chairman, without in any way suggesting that I have had any conversations concerning pardons, totally apart from that, there are privileges of communication within the Department of Justice that we share, all of us do. We have a right to have full and robust debate within the Department of Justice. We encourage people to speak up and argue cases on different sides, and those arguments are not
revealed.
Historically, we've seen that they shouldn't be revealed.
One of the comments you made in your testimony was that you'd reached this conclusion about the performance of then-Director Comey's ability to lead the FBI, that you agreed with Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's memo. The fact that you'd worked with Director Comey for some time, did you ever have a conversation as a superior of Director Comey with his failure to perform or some of these accusations that he wasn't running the FBI in a good way or that somehow the FBI is in turmoil? Did you have any conversations with Director Comey about those subjects?
I did not.
So you were his superior, and there were some fairly harsh things said about Director Comey. You never thought it was appropriate to raise those concerns before he was actually terminated by the president?
I did not do so. Memorandum was prepared by the Deputy Attorney General, who evaluated his performance, noted some serious problems with it.
And you agreed with those conclusions?
I agreed with those. In fact, Senator Warner, we had talked about it even before I was confirmed and before he was confirmed, It's something that we both agreed to, that a fresh start at the FBI was probably the best thing.
It just, again, seems a little, I could understand that if you talked about that before you came on, you had a chance for a fresh start, there was no fresh start, suddenly we're in the midst of the investigation, and with timing that seems a little peculiar, that what kind of, to, at least to me, was out of the blue, the president fires the FBI director, and if there are all these problems of disarray and a lack of esprit de corps at the FBI, all things that the acting director of the FBI denied is the case, I would have thought that somebody would have had that kind of conversation with Director Comey. He was at least been owed that. Let's go to the April 27th meeting. Has been brought up, I think the chairman brought it up. By the time April 27th came around, you'd already been named as the chair of then-candidate Trump's National Security Advisory. So showing up that meeting would be appropriate, not only
that was the Mayflower Hotel.
Right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you know, my understanding was that the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, was at that meeting as well?
I believe he was, yes.
You don't recollect whether Mr. Kushner had any conversations with Ambassador Kislyak at that session?
I do not.
Okay. And to the best of your memory, you had no conversation with Ambassador Kislyak at that meeting?
I don't recall it, Senator Warner. It would have been, certainly, I can assure you, nothing improper if I'd had a conversation with him, and it's conceivable that that occurred. I just don't remember it.
But there was nothing in your notes or memories so that when you had a chance, and you did, and I appreciate, correct the record about the other two sessions in response to Senator Frank and Senator Leahy, this one didn't pop into your memory that maybe in the overabundance of caution that you ought to report that this session as well.
I did not in any way fail to record something in my testimony or in my subsequent letter intentionally false.
I understand that, sir. I'm just trying to understand when you corrected the record, and clearly by the time you had a chance to correct the record, I would have thought that you would have known that Ambassador Kislyak was at that April 27th session. It received quite a bit of press notoriety.
I came there not knowing he was going to be there. I don't have any recollection of even knowing he would be there. I didn't have any communications with him before or after that event.
At the Mayflower event.
Well, let me just, I didn't know he would be in the audience and had no.
So at the Mayflower event, though, there was this, I guess, kind of VIP reception first, and then people went into the speech. Is that just so I get a?
That's my impression. That's my recollection.
And you were part of the VIP reception?
Yes.
Yes, sir. General Sessions, one of the, again, troubling things that that I need to sort through is, you know, Mr. Comey's testimony last week was that he felt uncomfortable when the president asked everyone else to leave the room. He left the impression that you lingered, with perhaps a sense that you felt uncomfortable about it as well. I'm going to allow you to obviously answer and correct if that's not the right impression. After this meeting took place, which clearly Director Comey felt had some level of uncomfortableness, you never asked Director Comey what took place in that meeting?
Well, I would just say it this way. We were there. I was standing there, and without revealing any conversation that took place, what I do recall is that I did depart. I believe everyone else did depart, and Director Comey was sitting in front of the president's desk, and they were talking. So that's what I do remember. I believe it was the next day that he said something, expressed concern about being left alone with the president. But that in itself is not problematic. He did not tell me at that time any details about anything that was said that was improper. I affirmed his concern that we should be following the proper guidelines of the Department of Justice and basically backed him up in his concerns, and that he should not carry on any conversation with the president or anyone else about an investigation in a way that was not proper. I felt he, so long in the department, former deputy attorney general, as I recall, knew those policies probably a good deal better than I did.
Senator Risch.
As you probably know, on February 14th, the New York Times published an article alleging that there was constant communications between the Trump campaign and the Russians, and collusion regarding the the elections. You recall that that article when it came out?
Not exactly.
Generally.
But that was generally, I remember those charges.
Mr. Comey told us when he was here last week that that he had a very specific recollection. In fact, he chased it down through the intelligence community and was not able to find a scintilla of evidence of that effect. Then he sought out both Republicans and Democrats up here to tell them that this was false, that there was no such facts anywhere that that corroborated what the New York Times had reported. You aware of any such information of collusion?
Is that arose from the dossier, so-called dossier, Senator Rich? Is that what you're referring
well,
to?
Well, we're anywhere.
I believe that's the report that Senator Franken hit me with when I was testifying. And it, I think, has been pretty substantially discredited, but you would know more than I. But it, what was said that would suggest I participated in the continuing communications with Russians over as a surrogate is absolutely false.
Mr. Sessions, there's been all this talk about conversations and that you had some conversations with the Russians. Senators up here who are on either foreign relations, intelligence, or armed services, conversations with officers of other governments or ambassadors or what have you are everyday occurrences here, multiple time occurrences for most of us. Is that a fair statement?
I think it is, yes.
On the other hand, collusion with the Russians or any other government for that matter when it comes to our elections certainly would be improper and illegal. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely.
All right. You participated, as you've described, in the Trump campaign. And as such, you traveled with the campaign, I gather?
I did.
Based upon your experience and based upon your participation in the campaign, did you hear even a whisper or a suggestion or anyone making reference within that campaign that somehow the Russians were involved in that campaign?
I did not.
Okay. What would you have done if you'd have heard that?
Well, I would have been shocked and I would have known it was improper.
And headed for the exit, I suppose.
Well, maybe. All right. So this was this is a serious matter because what you're talking about is hacking into a private person or DNC computer and obtaining information and spreading that out. That's just not right. And I believe it's likely that laws were violated if that actually occurred. So it's an improper thing.
Mr. Sessions, has any person from the White House or the administration, including the President of the United States, either directed you or asked you to do any unlawful or illegal act since you've been Attorney General of the United States?
No, Senator Rich. Thank not.
You. Senator Feinstein.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Attorney General.
Thank you.
On May 19th, Mr. Rosenstein, in a statement to the House of Representatives, essentially told them that he learned on May 8th that President Trump intended to remove Director Comey. When you wrote your letter on May 9, did you know that the president had already decided to fire Director Comey?
Senator Feinstein, I would say that I believe it's been made public that the president asked us our opinion. It was given, and he asked us to put that in writing. I don't know how much more he said about it than that, but I believe he has talked about it, and I would let his words speak for themselves.
Well, on May 11th, on NBC Nightly News, 2 days later, the president stated he was going to fire Comey regardless of the recommendation. So I'm puzzled about the recommendation because the decision had been made. So what was the need for you to write a recommendation?
Well, we were asked our opinion, and when we expressed it, which was consistent with the memorandum and letter we wrote, I felt comfortable in I guess the Deputy Attorney General did, too, in providing that information in writing.
So do you concur with the president that he was going to fire Comey regardless of recommendation because the problem was the Russian investigation?
Senator Feinstein, I guess I'll just have to let his words speak for himself. I'm not sure what was in his mind explicitly when we talked with him.
Did you ever discuss Director Comey's FBI handling of the Russia investigations with the president or anyone else?
Senator Feinstein, that would call for a communication between the Attorney General and the president, and I'm not able to comment on that.
You are not able to answer the question here whether you ever discussed that with him?
That's correct.
And how do you view that? Since you discussed his termination, why wouldn't you discuss the reasons?
Well, those were put in writing and sent to the president, and he made those public, so he made that public.
So you'd had no verbal conversation with him about the firing of Mr. Comey?
I'm not able to discuss with you or confirm or deny the nature of private conversations that I may have had with the president on this subject or others. And I know that how this will be discussed, but that's the rules that has been long adhered to by the Department of Justice, as you know, Senator Feinstein.
You're a longtime colleague, but we heard Mr. Coates and we heard Admiral Rogers say essentially the same thing, when it was easy just to say if the answer was no, no.
Well, it would have been easier to say if it was yes, yes, but both would have been improper.
Senator Rubio.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Attorney General. I want to go back to February 14th and kind of close the loop on the details. Director Comey was here, provided great detail about that day. So what I've heard so far is there was a meeting in the Oval Office on the 14th. You recall being there along with him. At some point, the meeting concluded. The president, everyone got up to leave. The president asked Director Comey to stay behind, correct?
Well, that's a communication in the White House that I would not comment on.
All right,
I do indicate.
You remember seeing him stay behind?
Yes.
Okay. And his testimony was that you lingered. And his view of it was you lingered because you knew that you needed to stay. That was his characterization. Do you remember lingering? Do you remember feeling like you needed to stay?
I do recall being one of the last ones to leave.
Did you decide to be one of the last ones to leave?
I don't know how that occurred. We had finished counterterrorism briefing. A number of people were there, and people were filtering out. I eventually left, and I do recall that I think I was one of the last two or three to leave.
Would it be fair to say that you felt like you needed to stay because it involved the FBI director?
Well, I don't know how I would characterize that, Senator Rubio. I left. It didn't seem to me to be a major problem. I knew that Director Comey, longtime experience in the Department of Justice, could handle himself well.
So you saw him after that. He characterized it as he went up to you and said, never leave me alone with the president again. It's not appropriate. And he said, this is his characterization, you just kind of shrugged like as if to say, what am I supposed to do about it?
I didn't say I wouldn't be able to respond if he called me. He certainly knew that with regard that he could call his direct supervisor, which in the Department of Justice, the direct supervisor to the FBI is the deputy attorney general. He could have complained to the deputy or to me at any time if he felt pressured, but I had no doubt that he would not yield to any pressure.
Do you know if the president records conversations in the Oval Office or anywhere in the White House?
I do not.
Let me ask you this. If, in fact, any president was to record conversations in their official duties in the White House or the like, would there be an obligation to preserve those records?
I don't know, Senator Rubio. Probably so.
I want to go to the campaign for a moment. As I'm sure you're aware, as it's been widely reported, Russian intelligence agencies often pose not simply as an official, but in covers as businessmen, a journalist, and the like. At any point during the campaign, did you have an interaction with anyone who, in hindsight, you look back and say they were trying to influence me or gain insight that, in hindsight, you look at and wonder?
I don't believe in my conversations with the three times.
General.
I met a lot of people, a lot of foreign officials who wanted to argue their case for their country and to point out things that they thought were important for their countries.
But yes, never,
that's a normal thing, I guess, we talk about.
Right, but as far as someone who's not an official from another country, just a businessman or anyone walking down the street who kind of struck you as someone that was trying to find out what you were up to or what the campaign was up to, you never remember any sort of interaction that in hindsight appears suspicious?
Well, I'd have to rack my brain, but I don't recall it now.
My last question. You were on the foreign policy team. The platform, the Republican platform, was changed to not provide defensive weapons to Ukraine. Were you involved in that decision? Do you know how that change was made or who was involved in making that change?
I was not active in the platform committee, did not participate in that, and don't think I had any direct involvement.
Do you know who did, or do you have no recollection of a debate about that issue internally in the campaign?
I never watched the debate. If it occurred on the platform committee, I think it did. So I don't recall that, Senator Rubio. I'd have to think about that.
Senator White.
Were you aware of any concerns at the FBI or elsewhere in government about your contacts with the Russians or any other matters relevant to whether you should step aside from the Russian investigation?
Mr. Comey, perhaps he didn't know, but I basically recused myself the first day I got into the office because I never accessed files. I never learned the names of investigators. I never met with them. I never asked for any documentation. The documentation, what little I received, was mostly already in the media and was presented by the senior ethics public responsibility, professional responsibility attorney in the department.
General,
and I made a honest and proper a decision to recuse myself, as I told Senator Feinstein and the members of the committee I would do when they confirmed me.
General Sessions, respectfully, you're not answering the question.
Well, what is the question?
The question is, Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? They are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute certainty. This is a secret innuendo being leaked out there about me, and I don't appreciate it. And I've tried to give my best and truthful answers to any committee I've appeared before. And it's really people are suggesting through innuendo that I have been not honest about matters, and I've tried to be honest.
My time is short. You've made your point that you think Mr. Comey is engaging in innuendo. We're going to keep digging.
Well,
on this.
Senator Wyden, he did not say that.
He said it was problematic, and I asked you what was problematic about it.
Some of that leaked out of the committee that he said in closed sessions.
Okay. One more question. I asked former FBI director whether your role in firing him violated your recusal, given that President Trump said he fired Comey because of the Russian investigation. Director Comey said this was a reasonable question. So I want to ask you just point blank, why did you sign the letter recommending the firing of Director Comey when it violated your recusal?
It did not violate my recusal. That would be the answer to that. And the letter that I signed represented my views that had been formulated for some time.
And asked, when will this taxpayer-funded charade end? I don't think your answer passes the smell test.
Well, Senator Wyden, I think I should be allowed to briefly respond at least and would say the letter, the memorandum that Deputy Rosenstein wrote and my letter that accompanied it, represented my views of the situation.
Senator Collins.
Attorney General Sessions, I want to clarify who did what with regard to the firing of Mr. Comey. First of all, let me ask you, when did you have your first conversation with Rod Rosenstein about Mr. Comey?
We talked about it before either one of us were confirmed. It was a topic of, conversation among people who'd served in the department a long time. They knew that what had happened that fall was pretty dramatically unusual. Many people felt it was very wrong. And so it was in that context that we discussed it. And we both found that we shared a common view that a fresh start would be appropriate.
Now, subsequently, the president asked for you to put your views in writing. You've testified today. And I believe that you were right to recuse yourself from the ongoing Russian investigation. But then on May 9th, you wrote to the president recommending that Mr. Comey be dismissed. And obviously, this went back many months to the earlier conversations you had had with Mr. Rosenstein. But my question is, why do you believe that your recommendation to fire Director Comey was not inconsistent with your March 2nd recusal?
Thank you. The recusal involved one case involved in the Department of Justice and in the FBI. They conduct thousands of investigations. I'm the Attorney General of the United States. It's my responsibility to our Judiciary Committee and other committees to ensure that that department is run properly. I have to make difficult decisions. And I do not believe that it is a sound position to say that if you're recused for a single case involving any one of the great agencies like DEA or U.S. Marshals or ATF that are part of the Department of Justice, you can't make a decision about the leadership in that agency.
Now, if you had known that the president subsequently was going to go on TV and in an interview with Lester Holt of NBC would say that this Russian thing was the reason for his decision to dismiss the FBI director, would you have felt uncomfortable about the timing of the decision?
Well, I would just say this, Senator Collins. I don't think it's appropriate to deal with those kind of hypotheticals. I have to deal in actual issues, and I would respectfully not comment on that.
Well, let me ask you this. In retrospect, do you believe that it would have been better for you to have stayed out of the decision to fire Director Comey?
I think it's my responsibility. I mean, I was appointed to be Attorney General. Supervising all the federal agencies is my responsibility. Trying to get the very best people in those agencies at the top of them is my responsibility, and I think I had a duty to do so.
Now, Director Comey testified that he was not comfortable telling you about his one-on-one conversation with the president on February 14th because he believed that you would shortly recuse yourself from the Russian investigation, which you did. Yet Director Comey testified that he told no one else at the department outside of the senior leadership team at the FBI. Do you believe that the director had an obligation to bring the information about the president saying that he hoped he could let Michael Flynn go to someone else at the Department of Justice? There are an awful lot of lawyers at the Department of Justice, some 10,000 by last count.
I think the appropriate thing would have been for Director Comey to talk with the acting deputy attorney general, who is his direct supervisor. That was Dana Bente, who had 33 years in the Department of Justice.
Senator Heinrich.
Has the president ever expressed his frustration to you regarding your decision to recuse yourself?
Senator Heinrich, I'm not able to share with this committee private communications.
Because you're invoking executive privilege.
I'm not able to invoke executive privilege. That's the president's prerogative.
Well, my understanding is that you took an oath, you raised your right hand here today, and you said that you would solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And now you're not answering questions. You're impeding this investigation. So my understanding of the legal standard is that you either answer the question, that's the best outcome. You say, this is classified, can't answer it here. I'll answer it in closed session. That's bucket number two. Bucket number three is to say, I'm invoking executive privilege. There is no appropriateness bucket. It is not a legal standard. Can you tell me what are these longstanding DOJ rules that protect conversations made in the executive without invoking executive privilege?
Senator, I'm protecting the president's constitutional right by not giving it away before he has a chance to
review
it. And secondly, I am telling the truth in answering your question in saying it's a longstanding policy of the Department of Justice.
Are those policies written?
Even and to make sure the president has full opportunity to decide these issues.
Can you share those policies with us? Are they written down at the Department of Justice?
I believe they are.
This is the appropriateness legal standard for not answering congressional inquiries.
It's the my judgment that it would be inappropriate for me to answer and reveal private conversations with the president when he has not had a full opportunity to review the questions and to make a decision on whether or not to approve such an answer. One, there are also other privileges that could be invoked. One of the things deals with the investigation of the special counsel.
We're not asking questions about that investigation. If I wanted to ask questions about that investigation, I'd ask those of Rod Rosenstein. I'm asking about your personal knowledge from this committee, which has a constitutional obligation to get to the bottom of this. There are two investigations here. There is a special counsel investigation. There is also a congressional investigation. And you are obstructing that congressional investigation by not answering these questions. And I think your silence speaks volumes.
I would say that I have consulted with senior career attorneys in the department.
I suspect you have.
And they believe this is consistent with my duties.
Senator Risch asked you a question about appropriateness of if you had known that there had been anything untoward with regard to Russia and the campaign, would you have headed for the exits? Your response was maybe. Why wasn't it a simple yes?
Well, there was a improper, illegal relationship in an effort to impede or influence this campaign. I absolutely would have departed.
I think that's a good answer. I'm not sure why it wasn't the answer in the first place.
I find it strange
that neither you nor Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein brought up performance issues with Director Comey. And in fact, Deputy FBI Director McCabe has directly refuted any assertion that there were performance issues. This is troubling because it appears that the President decided to fire Director Comey because he was pursuing the Russia investigation and had asked you to come up with an excuse. When your assessment of Director Comey didn't hold up to public scrutiny, the president finally admitted that he had fired Director Comey because he was pursuing the Russia investigation, i.e. the Lester Holt interview. You've claimed that you did not break recusal when participating in Director Comey's firing, but it appears that his firing was directly related to Russia, not departmental mismanagement. How do you square those two things?
Well, you had a lot in that question. Let me say first, within a week or so, I believe May 3rd, Director Comey testified that he believed the handling of the Clinton declination was proper and appropriate, and he would do it again. I know that was a great concern to both of us because it did not that represented something that I think most professionals in the Department of Justice would totally agree that the FBI investigative agency does not decide whether to prosecute or decline criminal cases. Pretty breathtaking usurpation of the responsibility of the Attorney General.
Senator Blunt.
So when you said you possibly had a meeting with Mr. Kislyak, what you Did you mean you possibly met him?
I didn't have any formal meeting with him. I'm confident of that, but I may have had an encounter during the reception.
Could you have met other ambassadors at that reception as well?
I could. I remember one in particular that we had a conversation with whose country had an investment in Alabama, and we talked a little length about that. I remember that, but otherwise have no recollection of a discussion with the Russian ambassador.
Senator King.
You testified a few minutes ago, I'm not able to invoke executive privilege. That's up to the president. Has the president invoked executive privilege in the case of your testimony here today?
He has not.
Then what is the basis of your refusal to answer these questions?
Senator Kaine, the president has a constitutional...
I understand that, but the president hasn't asserted it.
Well, I'll
You said you don't have the power to assert the power of executive privilege, so what is the legal basis for your refusal to answer these questions?
I am protecting the right of the president to exert it, assert it if he chooses, and there may be other privileges that could apply in this circumstance.
Well, I don't understand how you can have it both ways. The president can't not assert it, and you've testified that only the president can assert it, and yet I just don't understand the legal basis for your refusal to answer.
Well, what we try to do, I think most cabinet officials, others that you questioned recently, officials before the committee, protect the president's right to do so. If it comes to a point where the issue is clear and there's a dispute about it, at some point, the president will either assert the privilege or not, or some other privilege would be asserted. But at this point, I believe it's premature for
You're
me to...
You're asserting a privilege that the president, you've testified.
Deny, it'd be premature for me to deny the president a full and intelligent choice about executive privilege. That's not... necessary at this point.
You testified a few minutes ago that, quote, we were asked for our opinion. Who asked for your opinion?
Right. The president asked for our opinion.
All right. So you just testified as to the content of a communication to
that
the president.
That is correct. But I believe he's already revealed that. I believe I'm correct in saying that. That's why I indicated that when I answered that question. But if he hasn't, and I'm in error,
so you can
I would have... constricted his constitutional right of privilege.
So you're being selective about the use.
No, I'm not intentionally. I'm doing so only because I believe he made that.
In any of your discussions with the president about the firing of James Comey, did the question of the Russian investigation ever come up?
I cannot answer that because it was a communication by the president, or if any such occurred, it would be a communication that he has not waived.
But he has not asserted the executive privilege.
He has not asserted executive privilege.
Do you believe the Russians interfered with the 2016 elections?
It appears so. The intelligence community seems to be united in that. But I have to tell you, Senator King, I know nothing but what I've read in the paper. I've never received any detailed briefing on how hacking occurred or how information was alleged to have influenced
the campaign. Between the election, there was a memorandum from the intelligence community on October 9th that detailed what the Russians were doing after the election, before the inauguration. You never sought any information about this rather dramatic attack on our country?
No.
You never asked for a briefing or attended a briefing or... the intelligence reports?
You might have been very critical of me if I, as an active part of the campaign, was seeking intelligence relating to something that might be relevant to the campaign. I'm not sure that
I'm not talking about the campaign. I'm talking about what the Russians did. You received no briefing on the Russian active measures in connection with the 2016 election.
No. I don't believe I ever did.
Let's go to your letter of May 9th. You said, based upon my evaluation and for the reasons expressed by the deputy, was that a written evaluation?
My evaluation was an evaluation that had been going on for some months.
Is there a written evaluation?
I did not make one. I think you could classify Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's memorandum as an evaluation, one that... and he was the direct supervisor of the FBI director.
And his evaluation was based 100% on the handling of the Hillary Clinton emails. Is that correct?
Well, in a number of other matters, but...
Senator Lankford. relating to this April 27th meeting, non-meeting, in the same room at the same time, the National Interest was asked specifically about this as well, who was the host of that event. They stated this in writing: as the host, the Center for National Interest decided whom to invite and then issued the invitations. The Trump campaign did not determine or approve the invitation list. Guests at the event included both Democrats and Republicans, with some among the latter supporting other candidates. Most of the guests were Washington-based foreign policy experts and journalists. Center for National Interest invited Russian Ambassador Kislyak and several other ambassadors to the speech. We regularly invite ambassadors and other foreign representatives to our events to facilitate dialogue. And then they stated, we seated all four in the front row during the speech in deference to their diplomatic status. The Trump campaign had nothing to do with the seating arrangement. The Center for National Interest extended equal treatment to the four ambassadors attending the event and invited each to a short reception prior to the Trump speech. The reception included approximately two dozen guests in a receiving line. The line moved quickly, and any conversations with Mr. Trump in that setting were inherently brief and could not be private. Our recollection is that the interaction between Mr. Trump and the Ambassador Kislyak was limited to polite exchange of pleasantries appropriate on such occasions. We're not aware of any conversation between Ambassador Kislyak and Senator Jeff Sessions at the reception. However, in a small group setting like this one, we consider it unlikely that anyone could have engaged in a meaningful private conversation without drawing attention from others present. Do you have any reason to disagree with that?
No, I think that's a very fair description of the reception situation. I appreciate them having made that statement.
Senator Mann.
This Russian hacking is very serious to me and concerning. And you're saying that you had not been briefed on that. October 9th, the one that was known that the ODNI at that time, I think Mr. Clapper and also Mr. Jay Johnson, Homeland Security, made that public what was going on. Then on December 29th, President Obama at that time expelled 35 Russian diplomats, denied access to two Russian-owned compound, and he broadened the existing sanctions. Sir, I would ask, do you have any discussions at all? Have you had any discussions or sat in on any type of meetings where recommendations were made to remove those sanctions?
I don't recall any such meeting.
You were part of the national security team, so if he would have heard something about Russia and with their capabilities and our concern about what they could do to our election process, was there ever any conversations concerning that whatsoever?
I don't recall it, Senator Manchin.
I know it's been asked of you the things that, you know, your executive privileges in protecting the president. I understand that. But also when we had Mr. Comey here, you know, he couldn't answer a lot of things in an open session. He agreed to go into a closed session. Would you be able to go into a closed session? Would it change your answers to us or your ability to speak more frankly on some things we would want to know?
Senator French, Manchin, I'm not sure. The executive privilege is not waived by going in camera or in closed session.
To the best of your knowledge, did any of the following individuals meet with Russian officials at any point during the campaign? You can just go yes or no as I go down through the list. Paul Manafort?
I don't have any information that he had done so. He served as campaign chairman for a few months.
Steve Bannon?
I have no information that he did.
General Michael Flynn?
I don't recall it.
Reince Priebus?
I don't recall.
Steve Miller?
I don't recall him ever having such a conversation.
Corey Lewandowski?
I don't not recall any of those individuals having any meeting with Russian officials?
Carter Page?
I don't know.
And Senator Cotton?
Last week, Mr. Comey, in characteristic, dramatic, and theatrical fashion, alluded ominously to what you call innuendo, that there was some kind of classified intelligence that suggested you might have colluded with Russia or that you might have otherwise acted improperly. You've addressed those allegations here today. Do you understand why he made that allusion?
Actually, I do not.
You said that you did respond to Mr. Comey. Mr. Comey's testimony said that you did not. Do you know why Mr. Comey would have said that you did not respond to him on that conversation with you on February 14th or 15th?
I do not.
Do you know why Mr. Comey mistrusted President Trump from their first meeting on January 6th? He stated last week that he did, but he didn't state anything from that meeting that caused him to have such mistrust to believe?
I'm not able to speculate on that.
Let's turn to the potential crimes that we know have happened. Leaks of certain information. Here's a short list of what I have. The contents of alleged transcripts of alleged conversations between Mr. Flynn and Mr. Kislyak. The contents of President Trump's phone calls with Australian and Mexican leaders. The content of Mr. Trump's meetings with the Russian foreign minister and the ambassador. The leak of the Manchester bombing suspect's identity and crime scene photos. And last week, within 20 minutes of this committee meeting in a classified setting with Jim Comey, the leak of what the basis of Mr. Comey's innuendo was. Are these leaks serious threats to our national security, and is the Department of Justice taking them with the appropriate degree of seriousness in investigating and ultimately going to prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law?
Thank you, Senator Cotton. We have had one successful case very recently in Georgia. That person has been denied bail, I believe, and is being held in custody. But some of these leaks, as you well know, are extraordinarily damaging to the United States security. And we have got to restore a regular order principle.
Thank you. My time has expired. But for the record, it was stated earlier that the Republican platform was weakened on the point of arms for Ukraine. That is incorrect. The platform was actually strengthened. And I would note that it was the Democratic president who refused repeated bipartisan requests of this Congress to supply those arms to Ukraine.
Senator Harris.
Attorney General Sessions, you have several times this afternoon prefaced your responses by saying, to the best of your recollection. Just on the first page of your three pages of written testimony, you wrote, nor do I recall, do not have recollection, do not remember it. So my question is, for any of your testimony today, did you refresh your memory with any written documents, be they your calendar, written correspondence, emails, notes of any sort?
I attempted to refresh my recollection, but so much of this is in a wholesale campaign of extraordinary nature that you're moving so fast that you don't keep notes. You meet people. I didn't keep notes of my conversation with the Russian ambassador at the Republican convention.
Sir, I'd like
convention.
To just talk about
but
what you did.
You know, I'm just saying I didn't keep notes on most of these things, and there's
will
nothing for me.
Will you provide this committee with the notes that you did maintain?
As appropriate, I will supply the committee with documents.
Can you please tell me what you mean when you say appropriate?
I would have to consult with lawyers in the department who know the proper procedure before disclosing documents that are held within the Department of Justice.
Attorney
General,
I'm
not able to make that opinion today.
Sir, I'm sure you prepared for this hearing today, and most of the questions that have been presented to you were predictable. So my question to you is, did you then review with the lawyers of your department, if you as the top lawyer are unaware, what the law is regarding what you can share with us and what you cannot share with us, what is privileged and what is not privileged?
We discussed the basic parameters of testimony. I frankly have not discussed documentary disclosure rules.
Will you make a commitment to this committee that you will share any written correspondence, be they your calendars, records, notes, emails, or anything that has been reduced at any point in time in writing to this committee, where legally you actually have an obligation to do so?
I'll commit to reviewing the rules of the department, and as and when that issue is raised, to respond appropriately.
Did you have any communications with Russian officials for any reason during the campaign that have not been disclosed in public or to this committee?
I don't recall it, but I have to tell you, I cannot testify to what was said as we were standing at the Republican convention before the podium where I spoke.
Did you have any communication with any Russian businessmen or any Russian nationals?
I don't believe I had any conversation with Russian businessmen or Russian nationals.
Are you aware
Although
of any communications?
A lot of people were at the convention. It's conceivable that somebody
sir,
came
sir,
up
I have
to me.
Just a few.
Well, you minutes. Let me qualify it. If I don't qualify it, you'll accuse me of lying. So I need to be correct as best I can.
I do want you to be honest.
And I'm not able to be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
Are you aware of any communications with other Trump campaign officials and associates that they had with Russian officials or any Russian nationals?
I don't call that.
And are you aware of
at this moment?
Are you aware of any communications with any Trump officials, or did you have any communications with any officials about Russia or Russian interests in the United States before January 20th?
No, I may have had some conversations, and I think I did, with the general strategic concept of the possibility of whether or not Russia and the United States could get on a more harmonious relationship and move off the hostility. The Soviet Union did, in fact, collapse. It's really a tragic strategic event that we're not able to get along better.
Before you were sworn in as Attorney General, how did you typically communicate with then-candidate or President-elect Trump?
I did not submit memoranda. I did not make formal presentations.
Did you ever communicate with him in writing?
I don't believe so.
And you referred to a longstanding DOJ policy. Can you tell us what policy it is you're talking about?
Well, I think most cabinet people, as the witnesses you had before you earlier, those individuals declined to comment because we're all about conversations with the president.
Sir, I'm just asking you about the DOJ policy you referred to.
A policy that goes beyond just the attorney general.
Is that policy in writing somewhere?
I think so.
So did you not consult it before you came before this committee, knowing we would ask you questions about
that? Well, we talked about it. The policy is
based... Did you ask that it would be shown to you?
The policy is based on the principle that the president...
Sir, I'm not asking about the principle. I'm asking when you would be asked these questions and you would rely on that policy. Did you not ask your staff to show you the policy that would be the basis for your refusing to answer the majority of questions that have been asked of you?
Chairman, a witness should be allowed to answer the question.
Senators will allow the chair to control the hearing. Senator Harris, let him answer.
Please do. Thank you.
We talked about it, and we talked about the real principle that's at stake. It's one that I have some appreciation for, as having spent 15 years in the Department of Justice, 12 as United States Attorney, and that principle is that the Constitution provides the head of the executive branch certain privileges, and that members, one of them is confidentiality of communications. And it is improper for agents of any department any departments in the executive branch to waive that privilege without a clear approval
Chairman,
of the president.
I have asked.
And that's the situation we're in.
For a yes or no, did you ask
so your
staff
the answer is
to
yes,
the
I
policy.
Consulted.
Senator, did you ask your staff
Senator
to see the policy?
Senator, time's expired.
Apparently
Senator
not.
Cornyn.
Attorney General Sessions, former Director Comey in his letter to FBI employees when he was terminated started this way. He said, I've long believed that a president can fire an FBI director for any reason or no reason at all. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and I think that was good for him to say, because I believe we're going to have a new an excellent FBI director, a person who is smart, disciplined, with integrity and proven judgment, that would be good for the Bureau. And I think that statement probably was a valuable thing for Director Comey to say, and I appreciate that he did.
The memorandum written by the Deputy Attorney General, your letter to the President forwarding that recommendation, didn't mention Russia at all. Is that your recollection?
That is correct.
Well, let me read just an excerpt from a memo from the Attorney General, March 9, 2012, entitled Election Year Sensitivities. It says, law enforcement officers and prosecutors may never select the timing of investigative steps or criminal charges for the purpose of affecting any election or for the purpose of giving an advantage or disadvantage to any candidate or political party. Such a purpose is inconsistent with the department's mission and with the principles of federal prosecution. Do you agree with that?
Essentially, yes.
So what essentially the Deputy Attorney General said is that former Director Comey violated Department of Justice directives when he held a press conference on July the 5th, 2016. He announced that
Secretary Clinton was extremely careless with classified email and went on to release other derogatory information, including his conclusion that she was extremely careless, but yet went on to say that no reasonable prosecutor would prosecute her. That is not the role of the FBI director, is it? That is a job for the prosecutors at the Department of Justice. That's what was meant by Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein when he said that Director Comey usurped the role of the Department of Justice prosecutors. Is that right?
That is correct. And former Attorney General Bill Barr wrote an op-ed recently in which he said he had assumed that Attorney General Lynch had urged Mr. Comey to make this announcement so she wouldn't have to do it. But in fact, it appears he did it without her approval, totally. And that is a pretty stunning thing. It is a stunning thing, and it violates fundamental powers. And then when he reaffirmed that the rightness he believed of his decision on May 3rd, I think it was, that was additional confirmation that the director's thinking was not clear.
Senator Reid.
First, a point, Attorney General. Senator Heinrich and others have raised the issue of longstanding rules. If there are written rules to this effect, would you provide them to the committee, please?
I will.
On July 7th, when Mr. Comey made his first announcement about the case, you were on Fox News, and you said, first of all, Director Comey is a skilled former prosecutor, and then you concluded by saying essentially that it's not his problem, it's Hillary Clinton's problem. Then in November, on November 6th, after Mr. Comey again made news in late October by reopening, if you will, the investigation, you said again on Fox News, you know, FBI Director Comey did the right thing when he found new evidence. He had no choice but to report it to the American Congress, where he had under oath testified. The investigation was over. He had to correct that and say, this investigation is ongoing now. I'm sure it's significant, or else he wouldn't have announced that. So in July and November, Director Comey was doing exactly the right thing. You had no criticism of him. You felt that, in fact, he was a skilled professional prosecutor. You felt that his last statement in October was fully justified. So how can you go from those statements to agreeing with Mr. Rosenstein and then asking the president or recommending he be fired?
I think in retrospect, as all of us began to look at that clearly and talk about it as perspectives of the Department of Justice, once the director had first got involved and embroiled in a public discussion of this investigation, which would have been better never have been discussed publicly, and said he it was over. Then, when he found new evidence that came up, I think he probably was required to tell Congress that it wasn't over, that new evidence had been developed. It probably would have been better and would have been consistent with the rules of the Department of Justice to never have talked about the investigation to begin with. Once you get down that road, that's the kind of thing that you get into that went against classical prosecuting policies that I learned and was taught when I was a United States attorney, an assistant United States attorney.
If I may ask another question. Your whole premise in recommending to the president was the actions in October involving Secretary of State Clinton, the whole Clinton controversy. Did you feel misled when the president announced that his real reason for dismissing Mr. Comey was the Russian investigation?
I'm not able to characterize that fact. So, I wouldn't try to comment on that.
So you had no inkling that there was anything to do with Russia until the president of the United States basically declared it not only on TV, but in the Oval Office to the Russian foreign minister saying, the pressure's off now, I got rid of that nut job. That came to you as a complete surprise.
Well, all I can say is, Senator Reid, that our recommendation was put in writing, and I believe it was correct. And I believe the president valued it, but how he made his decision was his.
Senator McCain.
Over the last few weeks, the administration has characterized your previously undisclosed meetings with Russian Ambassador Kislyak as meetings you took in your official capacity as a U.S. Senator and a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. As chairman of that committee, let me ask you a few questions about that. At these meetings, did you raise concerns about Russian invasion of Ukraine or annexation of Crimea?
I did, Senator McCain, and I would like to follow up a little bit on that. That's one of the meetings that's one of the issues that I recall explicitly. The day before my meeting with the Russian ambassador, I'd met with the Ukrainian ambassador, and I heard his concerns about Russia. And so I raised those with Mr. Kislyak, and he gave, as you can imagine, not one inch. Everything they did, the Russians had done, according to him, was correct. And I remember pushing back on it, and it was a bit testy on that subject.
Knowing you on the committee, I can't imagine that. Did you raise concerns about Russia's support for President Bashar Assad and his campaign of indiscriminate violence against his own citizens, including his use of chemical weapons?
I don't recall whether that was discussed or not.
Did you raise concerns about Russia's interference in our electoral process or its interference in the electoral processes of our allies?
I don't recall that being discussed.
At those meetings, if you spoke with Ambassador Kislyak in your capacity as a member of the Armed Services Committee, you presumably talked with him about Russia-related security issues that you have demonstrated as important to you as a member of the committee?
Did I discuss security issues?
I don't recall you as being particularly vocal on such issues.
Repeat that, Senator McCain. I'm sorry.
The whole Russia-related security issues that you demonstrate is important to you as a member of the committee. Did you raise those with him?
You mean such issues as nuclear issues?
In other words, Russia-related security issues. In your capacity as the chairman of the Strategic Forces Subcommittee, what Russia-related security issues did you hold hearings on or otherwise demonstrate a keen interest in?
We may have discussed that. I just don't have a real recall of the meeting. I was not making a report about it to anyone. I just was basically willing to meet and see what he discussed.
And his response was?
I don't recall.
During the 2016 campaign season, do you have any contacts with any representative, including any American lobbyist or agent of any Russian company within or outside your capacity as a member of Congress or a member of the Armed Services Committee?
I don't believe so.
Politico recently reported that in the middle of the 2016 elections, the FBI found that Russian diplomats whose travel the State Department was supposed to track had gone missing. Some turned up wandering around the desert or driving around Kansas. Reportedly, intelligence sources conclude that after about a year of inattention, these movements indicate, one, that Moscow's espionage ground game has grown stronger, more brazen, and that quietly the Kremlin has been trying to map the United States telecommunications infrastructure. What do you know about this development and how the Justice Department and other relevant U.S. government agencies responding to it?
We need to do more, Senator McCain. I am worried about it. We also see that from other nations with these kind of technological skills like China and some of the other nations that are penetrating our business interests, our national security interests. As a member of the Armed Services Committee, I did support and advocate, and I think you supported legislation that would, and it's ongoing now, that requires the Defense Department to identify weaknesses in our system and how we can fix them. But I would say to you, Senator McCain, that is, in my short tenure
here in the Department of Justice, I've been more concerned about computer hacking and those issues than I was at the in the Senate. It's an important issue. You're correct.
The Washington Post reported yesterday Russia has developed a cyber weapon that can disrupt the United States power grids and telecommunications infrastructure. This weapon is similar to what Russia or Russian-allied hackers used to disrupt Ukraine's electrical grid in 2015. Can you discuss a little bit in open session how serious that is?
I don't believe I can discuss the technological issues, just to say that it is very disturbing that the Russians continue to push hostile actions in their foreign policy, and is not good for the United States or the world or Russia, in my opinion.
Do you believe we have a strategy in order to counter these ever-increasing threats to our national security and our way of life?
Not sufficiently. We do not have a sufficient strategy dealing with technological and IT penetrations of our system. I truly believe it's more important than I ever did before, and I appreciate your concern and leadership on that issue. And, in fact, all of Congress is going to have to do better. Mr. Chairman, one brief comment, if you mind. I do want to say that a change at the top of the FBI should have no impact whatsoever on the investigation. Those teams have been working, and they'll continue to work, and they've not been altered in any way.
But there were a number of very strange comments that Mr. Comey testified last week that you could have, I believe, shed some light on. But we'll continue. Thank you, sir.
There were several questions that you chose not to answer because of confidentiality with the president. I would only ask you now to go back and work with the White House to see if there are any areas of questions that they feel comfortable with you answering, and if they do, that you provide those answers in writing to the committee.
The Lawfare Podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. I'll bet you hadn't thought as you were listening to this podcast, gee, I should really donate to Lawfare. But you should, so go to the site and click on the Support Lawfare button. It's really easy, and you'll feel good about yourself after you do it. While you're at it, visit the iTunes store and leave us a rating. You know that you've been using this podcast, listening to it, and relying on it too much not to leave a review so that other people can find their way to the light. By the way, you might also consider tweeting about the Lawfare Podcast, sharing it on Facebook, and maybe even using one of those obscure social media sites that people like me have never heard of. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.